Now we're going to talk casual with Paul Govan, the editor of Game Pro Family and one of the Geek Dad columnists for Wired magazines. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Adam. How you doing?
Very well, thank you, mate.
Well, I was just wondering why the casual angle tonight.
It's a very good question, and my answer is I caught up with Keith Ramsdale, the Vice President and General Manager for EA UK and Nordic, at a special event they hosted in London, showcasing the functionality which is inside Boombox Blash. Sorry, I'm going to murder that. Inside a boom... Box Bash Party with people like the DCMS Minister Sean Simon in attendance. Now, Paul, are you a Boom Box fan?
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, I like the first game, and I've been looking forward to the follow up ever since playing it. Actually, yeah.
Okay, you've got three kids, is that right? One very small, but the other two are squarely in the Boom Box sort of bracket, are they?
Yeah, well, they've sort of grown up watching me play it, and in the sort of intervening time, I think the oldest one is now able to sort of give me a run for my money. She's got a lot better at play.
So we're building a market, or they're building a market, new gaming experiences, more people being brought in. Is that something you're seeing, Paul? Do you think EA are one of these people who are trying very hard to grow a market in new directions?
Yeah, I think they've done very well in embracing the Wii and the Wii technology. The games they put out, even before this latest batch, seemed to sort of get it bang on. The controls felt very sharp, and it felt more like a first-party sort of Nintendo's own game than something a third-party developer had developed. I think that's sort of testament to how sort of on the ball they were.
Yeah, and how much they're paying attention to this particular end of the market. Now, EA have got three main sections. They've got games, sports, and play, which is basically hobbyists, sports fans, and other. Now, that idea of other prompted me to ask Harvey Elliott, who's the Vice President of Casual, which is part of EA Play, how significant other was for them.
Well, other is huge. There are more people who are in the other category than there are in the games category. And I don't just mean people in the world. I mean people in homes with consoles or computers or access to playing games. We have more others out there than we have games players as we know them. The difference is we're not very good, or haven't been in the past very good, at talking directly to them with the right kind of games. Products like Boombox or The Sims or Harry Potter or the Hasbro products, which take board game family favourites and convert them into games, are speaking to them in a way that's much more familiar. You know, we're giving them experiences that they can relate to and understand, and I think that's where, you know, the other people who would be playing games, if we could just tell them what we make and how to get to them. I think where Wii is particularly strong is it's accessible. I have, my mum is now in her late 60s. Until we had a Wii, I don't live at home, until we had a Wii in our family home, my wife, and she came over, oh, that covered it. No, until we had a Nintendo Wii in our house, she would never have played a video game. But she now bowls, she now does Keep Fit, she now does exercises, and there's something, and she said, well, maybe I should get this when the grandkids come over.
The interesting development, of course, is that we're now in a position where Microsoft and Sony are getting into the human interface business, which is where Nintendo went first, and with a lower-spec machine. It's an interesting development for a market, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, I think the last time the consoles we were buying in the home were kind of refreshed. Nintendo and Microsoft chose very much to go to the high-end route, go to high visual graphics, high fidelity detail and graphics. And Nintendo didn't worry about the graphics so much, but put the innovation into the interface and the controls. And you're right, now Microsoft and Sony have looked at how they bring that kind of human interface to their games. I don't think there's anything wrong with either direction. The high-end consoles do a great job of exactly that, delivering high-end, high-definition, high-fidelity gameplay and sound.
And so, Paul, what he was alleging there is basically the Wii and the Wii interface, the business with just waving that remote around, has completely opened the market and let people who previously were sort of put off by the D-pad, put off by the controllers, into playing games. Do you think he's right there?
Yeah, I think he is. The analogy of seeing the controller as more like a TV remote control, and people who are playing games, the first time they saw that Wii controller was just sort of completely mind-bending, in fact, that you could play a game with something that looked like something you'd just been changing channel with. But it then went on to prove that it wasn't just a gimmick, it was actually a level of sort of nuance and sort of deft touch to the rules you were putting in, so that you were actually engaged in the game just as much as you were when you're using sort of twin analog sticks or pressing multiple buttons to pull off combinations.
And of course now we're getting the Wii Motion Plus comes in to give us that extra bit of resolution. We're going to get even more graduations of performance from the Wiimote, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Motion Plus is really interesting. It delivers something that we were trying to deliver with the pointing mechanic, but was always quite problematic because as soon as you went off the screen, it was very hard to bring that pointer back to pointing at the telly. But what they can do now with Motion Plus, with the gyroscope in it, is be constantly aware of which way you're pointing the controller without the problem of having to recenter it, which I think is going to deliver the sort of precision in sports games, fighting games, and different experiences that they've been promising from the off with the Wii. So I'm quite excited about it.
Paul, I'm still trying to figure out what defines a geek dad.
Well, I guess you need some children, and you probably need some gadgets.
Well, you've got a Wii in the house, Don.
Not the geek dad. Got geek kids, yeah, but it's the other way around, isn't it?
One of the things that Keith pointed out was the fact that I think it was that 100% of 15 to 25-year-olds are games players. There's obviously a tail in that, in the number of people going older, but it's not much of a tail. That's right, isn't it, Paul? Yeah, there are a lot more geek dads out there than a lot of people would suspect.
Yes, that's right. People who grew up playing games and are now into sort of family life and have got a lot less time. And maybe going back to touch on EA, that's, I think, something else they've got right. And they're not just hitting the family market, but with these games, there's the same level of depth and sort of excitement you can get out of them. Some of their previous more sort of hardcore games that you'd more traditionally think of playing by a gamer.
Hmm. Now, Keith Ramsdale did mention several things in there. He mentioned free gaming, so there's things like Free Realms and Club Penguin, subscription models, microtransaction models. So are we seeing the market getting away from the idea of going out and buying that big box and spending 50 quid, or however much money it's going to be, as the prices climb, which we think they're going to be doing in the near future? Are they people going to be looking at making it easier to get into gaming by staging the payment structure?
Yeah, I mean, by not having to stump up £30-40 for a game in one shot means that, you know, a parent can just dip their toe in the water, see if the experience is one that's going to fit with their family, and then if it is the one that fits, maybe try a few and then start investing in one they like.
Mm. That was sort of what Free Realms for Sony was aiming for, wasn't it? They offer you a lot of free content, and then there's add-on content, and you can also control the level of access that your children can get to that game.
Free Realms isn't a game I've sort of played in depth, but yeah, those sort of parent controls, so that rather than the kids being the ones who are in the know and with the power, so you as a parent can understand what they're going to experience and then decide what's appropriate for your child, because you know them best, so you're in that position.
Mm. It's a fascinating market, because it's almost too wide to talk about, isn't it? You can't really characterise who's playing, why they're playing, and what they're playing. Before, when we talked about video games, even 5 years ago, we were talking about a niche market. And like Keith and I think Keith said and Harvey sort of hinted at, there's no real way to address a niche anymore. What we're talking about is a mass market entertainment.
Yeah, I think that is right. You sort of park in the supermarket and it could well be going home to play on the Wii, and you often hear that sort of conversation much more sort of in public spaces, whereas previously that would be the sort of reserve of student common rooms and the like. It's more like, you know, daycare centres and wherever the sort of family places, you hear everyone talking about gaming, because that divide about who isn't a gamer just sort of doesn't exist anymore.
So it's pretty much mass market now, and as you say, it's because of money, isn't it?
This is an industry which makes money hand over fist, absolutely, yeah. And if they can pull in more people, then they'll do it. Where do you stand on this, Paul? If you try to make a mass market game, is there always a danger that you'll deliver a product that nobody actually is interested in?
That's an interesting question. I think as long as there's a genuine sort of depth and engagement in your experience and there's quality there, then you're able to appeal to a broad market. But I think you're always going to have someone in mind who's going to get the full experience. There's the top slice that everybody will enjoy, and slam tennis, picking up the Wii remote and having a hit around. But there's then a sort of a vertical slice whereby, you know, there's a smaller subset of players who are going to get the whole experience, go online, play against their friends, and develop to a sort of a full four-star, five-star character in that tennis game.
So it's all about depth?
Yeah, I think so. The depth, I think, is always going to be selected. So you can get the breadth, and that's what we're seeing with the Wii. Like Wii Sports, it didn't have that depth, and what it did was connect on a very broad level. And what they're trying to do now is to work out how do we get that depth in different... And you're seeing in Grand Slam, it's my current favourite tennis game, there's a real sense of depth there. Compare that to Wii Sports, whereas it's a very different experience.
You can see where the market's going, where it's all growing to. Paul, thank you very much.